A young man visits his grandparents in the countryside. While relaxing in the front yard, he sees a wide-brimmed hat moving behind the hedge. A woman appears, but as she walks away, he realizes the hedge is over 2 meters tall. If he could see her over that, then... When he mentions this strange woman to his grandfather, he finds out that her name is Hashaku-sama, the 8-foot-tall woman, and she only appears before those she intends to snatch away. Deep in the countryside, a young woman finds a strange-looking box in her back shed. When her friend, a Shinto priest, sees it, he becomes violently ill and warns everyone not to touch it. It's a kotoribako, a box filled with an incredible curse from which none who touch it can escape. In Kowabana, True Japanese Scary Stories from Around the Internet, Volume 2, you'll find over 90 scary stories and urban legends, many of which have been translated exclusively for this book. These are tales of Japanese ghosts, murder, suicide, revenge, cursed objects, and more. Find out what lurks deep in the Japanese countryside, how technology is out to get you, the secrets behind those who fight the supernatural, and much more. There's no masked killer hiding behind the bushes with a machete inside these pages. Find out what horrors are truly terrifying a nation right here. Available in ebook and paperback, February 3rd. Hey guys, this is your host Tara A. Devlin, and welcome to another episode of Kowabana, True Japanese Scary Stories from Around the Internet. As you just heard, Kowabana Volume 2 goes on sale this week. As much as I enjoyed making the first book, I think this one is a big improvement in all areas. It comes in at the same length as the first book, and along with the usual smaller tales, there are a few more well-known legends in this one as well, such as Hashaku-sama, Tsukima Onna, and my personal favourite, the Kotoribako. I'll be featuring the Kotoribako in a future podcast, but if you don't want to wait, go check out the book now. Now, this week's episode is one of my all-time favourite themes. There's a lot of things I like about Japanese horror, but one of the biggest has to be the cursed villages. These tiny places hidden way out in the middle of nowhere, that suddenly disappear overnight, or the curse that carries on throughout the generations. Japan has this beautiful contrast of huge, bustling cities and tiny, out-of-the-way villages that look like something you might have seen a century or two ago. Our first story this week is perhaps the most famous one of all. This one's called Sugisawa, the Cursed Village. In Aomori Prefecture, at the foot of a certain mountain, there was once a small village called Sugisawa. One day, a man who lived there suddenly went crazy and killed everyone with a hatchet, before killing himself. In the course of a single day, the entire population of the village was wiped out. What happened was so horrifying, the local government then tried to hide what happened and erased all evidence that the village had ever existed. The village name was erased from maps and all official record of it deleted. For over 50 years, the village remained silent, no one daring to go near it. However, no matter how much the government tries to conceal the truth, they cannot erase it from the memories of the people. The old folk in the area continue to tell the story of Sugisawa to this day. You could say it's an open secret amongst them. According to legend, there are 3 signs that reveal the path to Sugisawa. Number 1. There is a sign on the road leading to the village that says, "To those who enter, there can be no guarantee for your life. Number 2. There is an old, rotting shrine gate at the entrance of the village, beneath which lies a stone shaped like a human skull. Number 3. As you head into the village, there is an old abandoned building, a former house where, if you enter, you will find the bloodstains telling of the tragic event that once happened there. One particular story about the village goes as follows. One day, two young men and a woman went for a drive deep in the mountains when they got lost and stumbled upon an old, beat-up shrine gate. Beneath the gate there were two large stones, one of them shaped like a skull. The young driver saw it and remembered a rumor he'd heard long ago. The rumor was that a skull found at the bottom of a shrine gate was a sign of the entrance to Sugisawa. The two men got out of the car. However, the young woman said to them, "I'm scared. Let's get out of here." They decided to search the village, however, and all went in together. About 100 meters after passing under the shrine gate, they suddenly found a large open area before them, with four old abandoned buildings. The three of them stepped inside one of the buildings, and inside they found a large amount of dried blood on the walls. The two men felt a shiver run up their spines, and the woman suddenly cried out, "Hey, there's something strange about this place. I can feel a presence." The three of them fled the building in surprise, and as they did, they felt like they were being surrounded by a large number of people. The three of them ran for the car. However, something was wrong. No matter how much they ran, they couldn't seem to reach the car. From the open space to the car should have only been 100 meters, and it was a straight path. So there's no way they could have gotten lost. Even so, as the three of them kept running and running, they couldn't escape from Sugisawa. Unawares, the woman suddenly found herself separated from the two men, and as she kept running for what felt like forever, she somehow finally found herself back at the car. Thankfully, the keys were still in the ignition. She climbed into the driver's seat to go and get help and turned the key to start the car. However, no matter how much she turned the key, the car refused to start. On the verge of tears, she kept turning the key over and over, trying to get the car to go. Then, a large sound suddenly reverberated from the windscreen. She looked and noticed the windscreen was covered in bloody red handprints. No, not just the windscreen. Countless bloody red handprints appeared on all the windows, as though they were all being beat upon at the same time. The woman crouched down in fear, and before long, she fainted. The next morning, one of the locals, out for a morning walk, stumbled upon the bloody car and the dumbfounded young woman inside. Her hair had turned white from fear overnight. She was taken to the hospital, where she explained her terrifying experience. Afterwards, she disappeared and was never seen again. Her two male friends were also never found. The legend of Sugisawa Village has supposedly been around for quite some time in Aomori Prefecture, where the story takes place, But it became famous nationwide after appearing on a supernatural investigation TV show. It's been the basis for many stories since then, including that of one of my all-time favorite video games, Fatal Frame 2. To this day, people still try to find the village, and if you go on YouTube, you can see various videos that people have uploaded of their exploits. I'll leave a few links on koabana.net if you want to go and check them out for yourself. Now, our next story is about a young boy who moves to a small, modern residential town in Hiroshima Prefecture. He makes friends with another young girl, but as time goes on, he soon comes to realize not everything in the town is truly as it seems. What dark history does it hide? Find out in Kotori Kozo. This is a strange story that happened to me when I was a child. It's based on my memories as a kid, so it might be a little fuzzy in parts, but please bear with me. This takes place around the time I was starting elementary school, so I would have been around 5 years old. At the time, I lived in Hiroshima Prefecture. So, due to my father's job, we had to move. The place we were moving to was one of those so-called residential development towns. Those who are born and raised in the city probably won't understand, but basically they take a mountain and flatten it, creating a new residential town on top. There were a lot of these in Hiroshima at the time, but not just in Hiroshima, I think these were popping up all over the countryside. So when you drive up the mountain, you suddenly reach an area where everything spreads out. And that's where the residential town was. It was surrounded by other mountains. We moved to this new house, but it was still the countryside, so the nights were dark. The town had only just barely opened, so there were few people. As such, my parents said to me, "If you stay out after dark, you'll be snatched away and eaten by Kotori Kozo." Thinking back on it now, it was clearly just their way of saying, come back home early. But to me as a child, I pictured something with the head of a small bird, a kotori, and the body of a small elephant, kozo. I was so scared that such a creature might exist that no matter how much fun I was having, I always made sure to get back home on time. A few houses down from ours, there was a girl the same age as me, Emko, who had already been living there for quite some time. She was really cute. I'd even go so far as to say she was my first love. Anyway, we used to play together all the time. There were a lot of empty lots and houses under construction around. We'd sneak around and pretend they were our secret bases, and pretend dolls were our children and play family. We'd also go back to Emko's room and read comics and play. At some point, I started going to elementary school. And of course, I made friends with the boys there. And we would rough house a lot. But I also continued to play with Emko. While all this was going on, one day I realized something. Emko is the same age as me, so why isn't she at school? But I was still a child, so I soon forgot about it and didn't think too deeply on the subject. One day, we went to a mountain behind the school called Mount G for a school trip. It was big enough for us kids to reach the top in about an hour and a half on foot. There was a shrine at the peak, but there were so many trees that, despite the fact it was midday, it was kind of gloomy. It was a frightening place for a child. But we formed a line, and as we started walking up, I noticed Emko was beside me. "Ah, It's you. So you really do go to the same school. I wonder what class you're in, I thought to myself. There were a few classes, so it's not like we knew everyone. I grabbed her hand and we walked up the mountain together. But Emco seemed different to usual, more sad. She said very little the entire time. We reached the top and it was time to sit down and have lunch. I wanted to eat with Emco, but when I went to find her, she was nowhere to be found. Plus, the more I thought about it, if I ate lunch with a girl, the boys would tease me. In the end, I didn't see Emco again that day. Then, after that trip, for some reason, I saw Emco around less and less. I mean, I don't remember very clearly, but after that trip up Mount G, I feel like I played with Emco a few more times, but at the same time, I feel like I never saw her again. My memories aren't very clear. At the end of the second grade, we moved to Tokyo for my father's work once again. At the time, Emco was no longer on my mind so much. I even liked someone else. On the day we moved out, I wasn't really thinking about her either. Up until this point is the story of my childhood. Sorry it was so long. Let's get to the main part. After moving to Tokyo during the spring where I was about to begin the third grade, we never returned to Hiroshima again. A few years ago, I found this thread on Nichan, and when I started reading some blogs, I came across the story Kotori Bako. I didn't think much of it at the time, but while I was smoking a cigarette a few days later, I thought, come to think of it, Kotori Bako can be written like Kotori Bako, child-stealing box. Shimane Prefecture is also close to Hiroshima. Then it hit me. Hang on. The Kotori Kozo my parents tried to scare me with. That wasn't it at all. They really meant the child-stealing man. Kotori Kozo. The very next day, I called my parents to find out. When you said Kotori Kozo, did you mean the child-stealing man? What's that about? Ah, yeah, that's right. You did well remembering that. It's apparently a story they tell in the A district, but I don't know much more about it myself. The A district was the place we lived in Hiroshima. And so, just like that, I was unable to find out any more about the Kotori Kozo. A few months later, I went to Hiroshima for a few days for work. I took a rental car and went to visit the old residential town we used to live in. The old house was still there, but of course another family was living in it. It looked exactly the same as it did back then, and made me feel nostalgic. I stopped in front of the house and got out of the car, taking a quick look around. Up ahead, I saw Emco's house. It also looked exactly the same as it did back then. By now, Emco must have gotten married and had a family of her own. It was unlikely she would still be there. Would she even remember me anyway? Come to think of it, we didn't even say goodbye when I left. That was rude of me. But, I thought, if her mother was still there, I could perhaps ask about her. So I ran over to the house and rang the doorbell. Coming! Emco's mother appeared at the door. I debated whether I should explain everything to her when she looked at me and said, Oh, S-chan, is that you? Wow, you've gotten so big. Come in, have a cup of tea or something. I went inside. What's all this about? Showing up here so suddenly?
Oh no, I'm here on work and was feeling a little nostalgic.
I caught her up on recent events in my life, and then cut straight to what I wanted to ask her. What's Emco doing these days? Silence filled the room for what felt like 5 minutes. Her mother just looked at the ground and made no attempt to speak. I wondered if perhaps I'd said something wrong, but then finally she spoke.
You were still small, so you didn't know. Then you left for Tokyo, and we never got to tell you.
I had no idea what she was saying, but then she told me everything. What follows is Emco's mother's story. I've corrected her dialect to standard Japanese, and her story was a little longer than this, but I've cut out the unnecessary parts. The story also touched on some human rights issues, so I left those parts out. This happened when Emco was still only 1 year old. At the time, this area hadn't yet been opened up. It was just a small village in the mountains, what people now would call an assimilation district, I think. In any case, it was a small hamlet of formerly discriminated people. You've heard at least a little about that, haven't you? So, a government official came and informed us that they would be opening the area up, and the villagers got into a big fight with him. Looking at it from our point of view, we wanted to live out the rest of our lives here quietly and peacefully. The fact that they wanted to build such a large residential development area was unthinkable. So, all of the men in the village got together to discuss what to do. In this area, there's a legend called Kotori Kozo. If you sacrifice a young girl under the age of 2 to him, it's said he will destroy your enemies. No sacrifice had taken place in over 20 years, but the village chief said, "We'll make a sacrifice to Kotori Kozo." All the men agreed.
"Yes, it's the only way."
Emco was the only girl under 2, and so the target fell right on her head. Of course, both myself and her father opposed it, but in the end there was nothing we could do, and the chief took a crying Emco from us to be sacrificed to Kotori Kozo. There's a mountain over there called Mount G, right? At the top of that mountain there's a shrine. I think you've been there before. That shrine is dedicated to Kotori Kozo. That's where the village chief took her, ripped crying from our arms. But after all that, the plans were drawn up and they opened the space up anyway. Of course, the hamlet was also destroyed in the process. From the people that used to live here, some remained. Some were moved to other parts of the prefecture, and we were all split up. And Kotori Kozo proved to be nothing but a legend. You and your family moved here just after the town opened, didn't you? At this point, I started to panic. No way! I mean, when I was a kid, I used to play with Emco, right? I came here to play all the time, and you were here when I did. My voice raised as I frantically questioned her. Then she started speaking again.
Yes, that's right. You often played with Emco. I often saw you playing by yourself out in the streets. And you often came in here alone, going up to Emco's room to play. I can't see Emco, you know. But then her father said, S-chan can see Emiko, and she's at an age where all she wants to do is play. Just let them play for a little while longer. Then at some point we stopped seeing you playing alone. I later heard that every year the first grade goes up Mount G for a school trip. You went too, didn't you? I'm just guessing, but I think that when you went to visit the shrine on Mount G, Emiko was finally able to go to heaven. I always planned to tell you once you got bigger, but then you suddenly moved to Tokyo. Both myself and my husband were worried, but I'm glad I finally got to talk to you today. Emiko's grave isn't too far from here. If you have time, I think she would be very happy if you went to visit it. I was in tears. It never once crossed my mind that all that time I had been playing with a ghost. No, more than that, I even firmly believed that there was no such thing as ghosts. I mean, I'm a science major. Science is everything to me. But I couldn't stop the tears from falling down my face, and could do nothing but nod as Emiko's mother told me her story. I went to visit Emiko's grave, and then I returned to Tokyo. Just recently, I feel like I've finally sorted everything out in my head, so I thought I'd post a thread about it. I still don't know if the infamous Kotori Bako and Kotori Kozo have anything in common, nor do I know if Emiko's mother's story was even really true. But in my mind, Emiko really existed. I still remember the warmth of her hand as we walked up the mountain together that day. She really was my first love. As you heard in this story, it also mentioned the Kotori Bako. A common feature of Japanese creepypastas is to mention others to lend more authenticity to their own. And the places are not named specifically, but instead they use letters like H Prefecture, M City, G Mountain, and so on. This allows people to search for where the story may have taken place, and when the letters match up to real places, it again adds a little more authenticity. Readers of this story tracked the supposed location down to a small city on the border of Hiroshima and Shimane prefectures. Now, our last story for this week is about a clan that was chased out of their village. With nowhere to go, they wandered the mountainside until they finally came across a strange, hawk-like man who instructed them on where to build their new village. Find out what happens in The Hawk Man Who Saved Our Clan. My family once lived in a small village in the mountains in the southern part of Kyushu. The name of the village was the same as our last name, and everyone in the village was related. Our family has a strange story about it that's been passed down over the years. Originally, our family lived somewhere else, but thanks to war, they were driven out and escaped to the mountains. From old men to teething babes, with nothing but the clothes on their backs, and not a single bite to eat, they found themselves depleted of energy and spirit. The surrounding area was dark, and they feared this may be the place where they... Everyone was on the verge of giving up. Then, from the darkness, a figure appeared. They said there was a gang out in the dark with their children, so I came to see what the fuss was all about. And here you really are. What a surprise. Thinking the locals were on alert and had sent a scout, the clan elder told him that they would be gone by morning, and to please overlook their trespassing. The figure looked over the tired people, and after a short pause, said, "The nights are cruel out here. There's a basin over there. You can light a fire and keep yourself warm there." Then he left. There was nothing else they could do, so the clan did as instructed and spent the night in the basin. As morning came and they planned to move out, a man like a hawk came down from the mountain, carrying a wild boar. Everyone was surprised, but he said, "This is a gift from my beloved older sister, Aneja. Eat." It was the same voice as the person who had pointed them to the basin the night before. The people were wary, but also hungry, so they gratefully received the food. The hawk-like man asked the elders why they had come to the mountain while they were eating, and where they were planning to go next. They explained they had been chased out of their previous home and had no place to go now. The hawk man listened to their story and said, "If you go down from here, there's a river. Keep following that river and you'll come upon a large rock. That area is my little brother's territory. I'll let him know you're coming, so you can build your new village there." He then disappeared shortly thereafter. My ancestors thought he must be a mountain god, and so they did as he said and followed the river to a large rock and built their village there. After that, they called the god who lived there Yamasuso-sama, god at the foot of the mountain. The god they met up in the mountains, the Hawkman, Sanchu-sama, god among the mountains. And the god that the Hawkman spoke of, Aneja, as Sanjo-sama, god on the mountaintop. They worshipped and revered them. Incidentally, perhaps because the village was nearby, people often saw Yamasuso-sama. A large owl was often seen basking in the sun by a large rock near the river. It was said that those swimming in the river would never drown, so during summer children often played there. People often saw Yamasuso-sama watching the children play and have fun. Conversely, very few people saw Sanjo-sama. There was no way to confirm that she even existed, other than Sanchu-sama's mention of Anejo and a small shrine that sat at the top of the mountain.
So I hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode. If there are any other themes or stories you'd like to see in future episodes, you can let me know at koabana.net/podcast. And if you're enjoying this podcast, please consider leaving a review for it on iTunes. It's super easy, and you can find the link for it at koabana.net/podcast. Thanks, guys, and we'll see you again next week for even more Koabana, true Japanese scary stories from around the internet.
Want even more scary stories? Head over to koabana.net for new translations every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday and Sunday. You can also join our Patreon for exclusive stories you won't find anywhere else. Head over to koabana.net now.